ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Saturday Extra with Nick Bryant.
In 1776, the American colonies declared their independence from Britain. And July the 4th is the country's birthday. So join me, Nick Bryant, for our America at 250 series. Conversations on how the past continues to animate the present with historians and thinkers such as the legendary documentary maker Ken Burns. Search for Saturday Extra on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
What if the next great economic boom arrived in your town and nobody wanted it?
Across the United States, communities are pushing back against the data centers powering artificial intelligence.
So should Australia go all in on the next digital gold rush?
I'm Hamish McDonald.
And I'm Will A. Darley. This is Global Roaming.
So, Walid, I have a question for you. Did you do your prep for this episode of Global Roaming using ChatGPT, Gemini, or Claude?
No, I'm not an AI fan. I try very hard not to use it. I think the thing with Gemini, that's the one on the search engine that we probably shouldn't mention, isn't it? I almost can't avoid it. It just sort of comes up and hits me. But I don't have any of the other apps and so on and so forth. I'm keenly aware in taking that stance, though, Hamish, that I am rapidly becoming a dinosaur and will probably soon live in a world that has no use for me.
What's your reasoning? I'm really curious.
Well, I guess I was right about social media and refusing to be on it. I figured I might be right about this. I just have a general stance towards the uncritical acceptance of technology. I think that's probably what it is. And I think very often we approach things by asking one question, which is, how does it work and can I use it? And we don't ask questions about what are the long-term consequences of this. Doesn't mean that my assessments about this are right, and maybe I'm just a scaredy cat, but it worries me. But I will say this though, Hamish, on AI, surely everyone would now concede that we are beginning to ask those questions because the consequences to the job market, to the environment, all sorts of, you know, the idea of killer robots getting us one day. I mean, these are being debated as serious questions in a way that used to only happen, you know, in the sandpit at school.
And actually, I think in a strange way, even something which in the scheme of everything that's going on with tech is pretty small, and that's the social media ban for under 16s, I think we all now have an immediate experience of how challenging it is for governments to run in and sort of scoop up and regulate or legislate around it once that horse is already bolted. And I guess given the scale of what AI represents to all of the above that you've just mentioned, maybe Australians, and clearly what we're going to talk about is Americans, maybe citizenry is a little more alive to the fact that you can't just sort of wait until it's too late.
But around the world, I mean, the stuff that's happening in the United States, the level of investment, we are talking hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, that's true in Australia as well. It's becoming true in the pipeline. But AI investment in the United States, is private investment, reached $286 billion last year. I just think that's 1 year. And that means the building of huge amounts of data centers all over the place. I just wonder, you know, like even the Australian case, Westpac is estimating this will deliver a net boost to GDP of around $75 billion. No government wants to walk away from that, do they?
Well, I mean, if you think about, you know, what it must be like being the treasurer of Australia right now and trying to find your way back to surplus, trying to deal with all of the cost of living pressures, if you're observing that one sector has a pipeline of $150 billion worth of possible investments, yeah, you can't look away from that. You can't ignore that. And it would be, I mean, you could also argue it would be immoral to do so, given the way people are experiencing life, the pressures, you know, on the health system, the aged care system, and, you know, the pressures on the working age population. This is something that would offer a genuine opportunity to give Australia its next kind of burst of economic growth. Like, it's within our lifetimes that the mining boom happened, and we can see what that did to our standard of living, the opportunity that was presented to us, you know, growing up in the, I guess we're about the same age, in the 90s, Walid, educated in, you know, the 2000s. this really shaped the way we experience life. And so our leaders today must be asking, well, what is there? What's on offer for younger generations coming through? How do we fund all the things that we want to fund? I think it's worth noting for listeners that Australia is not some kind of distant backwater on the data center issue. Australia is actually becoming a global epicenter for them. I think Sydney, for example, could have like the sixth highest concentration of data centers in the world. You know, we are becoming, or at least on the verge of becoming, a really big player on this.
Mm. But you mentioned the experience that people have in their lives and our experience of technology and booms before. The thing is, Hamish, it's precisely that thing, the thing of the experience that people are having in their lives that is causing a huge backlash in the United States. And really interestingly, it's not at the level of MAGA rallies. It's not at the level of presidential politics, although it certainly goes up to that. But it's at the level of communities, people who are concerned about the amount of energy use, about what the building of data centers is doing to their water supply. You know, really bottom line things, that kind of thing that make you go, well, I don't care what the GDP number is. I can't turn on my tap and I can't get water that I can drink out of it. And that's just the fundamental. So in some ways it captures so much. I thought it was really interesting that those concerns are in a way being preempted here. So listen to this, for example, this is Greg Borah. You don't need to listen, Hamish, because you did the interview. This is a few months ago. And he runs a data center, but he does it using recycled water, which is really interesting that he would think that that's an important thing to do. Have a listen.
We pioneered nearly 20 years ago free air capable air cooled chillers, which are basically huge radiators, just like your car radiator. You fill up the water once, and the water, it works in a closed loop system that goes around and around the facilities. And you can actually get all of the cooling impacts that are required for the critical computing infrastructure without using water.
And clearly any state government is going to want to be able to answer the public as to how this is all going to play out. Yes, it might have a good impact or potential good impact for the economy, but people want to know that it's not going to mean that they're going to have to use less water or that they're going to have higher energy bills. And that is something that has happened in the United States. Bernie Sanders, for example, one of the politicians there that's been basically campaigning on power bills, which have gone up because of all of these data centers.
Right. That's only one prong of the argument though, Hamish, isn't it? Because the other element of it is, and this is a very prominent one, I think, actually everywhere, but especially for Australia, is, well, isn't this all going to happen without us? And if it happens without us, aren't we then in massive trouble? That there is just this element of fatalism that creeps into the onslaught that AI is promising.
Andrew Charlton, who's the Labor MP for Parramatta, is now the Assistant Minister with carriage of these issues. He makes the argument exactly to your point, Waleed, that this is actually just a sliding doors moment for Australia, which he thinks we've got to walk through.
Australia is in a critical window in which we will determine whether this country builds a strong domestic AI industry or whether we become an importer of foreign AI and a permanent renter of intelligence from abroad. This isn't about whether AI is good or bad. It's about who owns it, who controls it, and whether the benefits are shared in Australia or concentrated abroad. And this is why, for me, the question of AI ownership is not abstract. It's arguably one of the most consequential economic decisions of this decade.
So there you hear Andrew Charlton giving, I think, that classic government view. I guess the thing is there are a lot of people, though, Hamish, for whom the question really is about whether AI is good or bad and the consequences of it and the building of the data centers and so on. I mentioned the backlash in America. Let's go there. Let's figure out exactly what that's like on the ground, what's driving it, how broad it is, how deep it is, what exactly is behind it. To do that, we couldn't have a better guest, really. His name is Robert Bryce. He's an author, he's an energy journalist, and he's a commentator who's spent years just documenting infrastructure conflicts across America. So it could be, you know, solar farms or wind farms or whatever it might be. Now AI data centers are a big part of that. He maintains a database tracking opposition to these data centers. And so as we're weighing up all of this, he's perhaps the perfect guide.
Thank you.
Robert, welcome to Global Roaming.
Happy to be with you. Thanks for having me.
It sounds like this thing is really big. How big is this in America right now? Can you paint a scale, a picture of the scale of this?
And we're talking obviously about the data center backlash. Well, let me put the broader context here because I think it's important. First, I've been a reporter. I've been a journalist my whole career. I've never had a real job. I've never seen anything like the backlash we're seeing in the U.S. against data centers. So I've created the data center rejection database, which is on my website, robertbryce.com. And I've documented now already in 2026, 115 rejections or restrictions. And these are all over the country. They're from conservative communities. They're in liberal towns. And so the backlash is real. But to put it in proper context, there are now about 770 data centers being built in the U.S. So there's a real resentment in the populace across the U.S. And it's very visible in this backlash.
And how much money is flowing into this business at the moment?
The numbers are in the range of $700 billion. Now, not all of that is going to be spent in the U.S. and not all of that is building data centers, right? Some of that's for chips and, you know, other projects. But it is a, you know, in terms of U.S. GDP, it's a significant portion of the growth of the U.S. economy now is happening in this data center sector.
I want to just get a flavor of some of the objection you're talking about. You mentioned it's cross-partisan. It happens across the political spectrum.
Yeah,
You know, there are all sorts of dimensions to it. Noise, just unsightliness, all these sorts of things. Perhaps the sharpest expression of it, I think, has been to do with what it does to just the basic amenities people need to live. Let's just take a listen for a moment to Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez really prosecuting this case about what it's done to water quality in the U.S.
Families in the area are starting to see not only their water pressure decrease, to your point about water availability, but their appliances have all stopped working because it is decimating their water quality. They now rely on bottled water to drink and prepare meals. In fact, I have a jar right here. This is the current drinking water in Morgan County, Georgia. Right after a data center was constructed, the Meta data center was constructed.
So, and she's holding up there a bottle of really dirty water. You can't drink it. These sorts of stories proliferate. I suppose the question, Robert, is when you have that on the one hand, and on the other hand, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars and an enormous contribution to GDP, what do you think will win?
Well, you know, don't bet against the money, but I would also say in my experience in looking at the backlash against solar and wind projects, I wouldn't bet against the people either. So I was down under last summer talking about the backlash against wind in particular and in Australia. It's all across the rural parts of Australia. And the same things are in play here in the U.S. where rural communities are saying, we don't want these solar projects, we don't want these wind projects, battery projects, et cetera, So I think that, you know, to me, Waleed, that, you know, the thing that I see in looking at land use conflicts broadly and the similarities between the backlash against solar and wind and the backlash against data centers are very obvious. So it's about the character of the neighborhoods. But with data centers, you add in the issues of water availability. And I can't speak to AOC's claims on that. You know, the big tech is saying we don't use that much water and they're reducing their water use, and that may well be. But everyone everywhere cares about their water. And now these data centers are being put in at the same time that we see big run-ups in electricity costs across the U.S. And then you add in the distrust or outright hatred of big tech.
I'm Waleed Ali with Hamish McDonald today on Global Roaming. We're speaking with author, journalist and commentator Robert Bryce. Robert spent years tracking infrastructure conflicts across America and now maintains a database documenting opposition to data centres. I suppose the difference, though, with the wind farms and the backlash against that sort of thing is that wasn't attached to a quite heroic You know, that we're seeing all these questions or these analyses, I should say, from economists, and they seem broadly agreed. You tell me if I'm wrong about this, but they seem broadly agreed that this is what is driving overwhelmingly the growth in the American economy. It's basically what's keeping it afloat or keeping it going ahead. And then you add the geopolitical overlay of if we're not going to do it, China's going to do it and we'll all be killed. And all, I mean, all these sorts of things. I just wonder to what extent those questions are being factored in to the arguments being made by the critics of these data centers.
I think they're front and center. And I think it's also a rejection of the gigantism of big tech. A friend of mine put it this way, and I thought it was a really good way to distill what we're seeing, which is that ordinary citizens can't fight Microsoft or Google or Amazon online. They just can't. You know, privacy is dead. Algorithms control what we see. You know, there's no, it's, you know, in this digital economy, it's hopeless. We've lost many parts of our privacy. So this resentment of the lanyard class, which is a Britishism, right, for the credentialed class, combined with this distrust, outright hatred of big tech and fear of AI and job loss. Again, I think all of these things come together in these groups now that are opposing these projects. And, you know, I don't fault local communities for this. Everyone everywhere cares about their neighborhoods. And this is another example of that, but it's a backlash that cuts across the political spectrum.
It's interesting the way you're describing it, because it sounds like the opposition is more than just about the data center, right? And yet here in Australia, we're hearing from the government an argument that, look, this is a boom. It's happening globally. We've got the opportunity to get in on the boom. And they want to set the conditions for the boom rather than the boom set the conditions. It sounds like what you're saying is that maybe people don't care even if the conditions are right. Like if the water usage and the energy consumption, even maybe the tax arrangements, if that all does work in favor of the public, maybe they still don't want it because they're angry with big tech.
That's a good observation, Hamish, and I would tend to agree. People are pissed. And the turnout that if for people showing up at their local, you know, city council or township council or whatever it is, again, I've never seen anything like it. It's tapped into a very deep vein of anger and resentment. And I think in the case of AI, some fear.
I suppose that's what stands out to me, because you were describing, you're comparing this to solar farms being rolled out, for example.
Yeah.
But I reckon even if people consume electricity or energy, they're not necessarily making the connection between the solar farm and what they're when they're turning on the kettle.
Yeah.
But I reckon people are using AI and must be able to see the benefits. So it's kind of curious to me that there is still that huge opposition. Are there examples of communities where it has worked, where the local community said, yes, we want this, we're deriving some benefit, and it's all hunky-dory?
Yes, I think people can see the benefit, increased tax base, you know, a new fire truck, I'm using that again, but they also see the headlines where Facebook is firing 10,000 of its own workers and replacing them with AI. And I think that's another part of this, is this looming, in some cases unspoken, in some cases very clearly spoken, concern about what AI means for them.
There's a fractious relationship at times between the Trump administration and the tech giants, right? Sometimes they're on side, sometimes they're not. How does the data center piece of this puzzle play politically?
Clearly, the Trump administration wants to promote AI, and, you know, the big tech companies have very powerful lobbies in Washington. These are very, very wealthy companies, you know, with multiple, you know, trillions of dollars in market capitalization, and they have hundreds of billions of dollars at stake. So make no mistake, there is a big political push on in Washington. But there is an emerging I think understanding as well that the anger at big tech and the fear of AI is also a very potent political issue. That's why you see AOC latching onto it.
But the AI thing is not happening in its own bubble, isolated from the rest of the economy. Like, I'm trying to think about this from the point of view of, like, let's just say you're Australian, the Australian government. There's $150 billion worth of these data center projects in the pipeline. And like many developed Western economies, you know, things are not looking fantastic at the moment. People are starting to feel a real difference in their quality, their standard of living. And so governments are looking for the next big opportunity to make sure that the populace continues to vote for them. How can you say no, if you're that government, to a huge investment pipeline like that?
It's a good point. And they don't want to say no. I mean, because of the economic development. And I think also the strategic, geostrategic, geopolitical issues, right? I see, validity in that argument. Well, we can't let China control AI. We can't allow them to have more powerful compute than us. So I get all of that. And I'm not discounting that, but I'm also trying to look at it as soberly as I can, as objectively as I can, and just look at it from the viewpoint of local town people and saying, well, I understand all these arguments. What's in it for me? Not much.
What do you think the Trump administration is going to do then, Robert? Because Hamish mentions that there's a bit of tension between Trump and the tech tycoons. But there's also, there's a hell of an alliance there as well. And Trump was very clear with his, what was it called, the Big Beautiful Bill, that he didn't want AI regulated. We've now seen him put an executive order in place, which looks like it might be regulating AI, but kind of isn't really. I just don't know where this is going.
If Trump, isn't the solution to all of this, Waleed, that you just put all the data centers on the moon?
Well, that's
or Mars, right. Is it?
And so this is why SpaceX is central to the whole. I understand, but for now, what's the Trump administration going to do here?
I think that a lot of the people in Washington are just flummoxed by this, right? And I think they've been backfooted by the whole thing, just as I think big tech has been backfooted. Right. They don't quite know how to respond because they're both the political class and big tech, the tech bros, Silicon Valley crowd. I think they've been backfooted by the whole thing. And they're looking at this and going, damn, what do we do now? Because they can sense and the polls very clearly show that the public is distrustful of big tech. But I think, let's skip past all of that, gentlemen, and just if I'm looking at this as objectively as I can and saying, okay, well, what should happen now? And if big tech was smart and they tell us they're smart, well, make sure where you're putting these projects that people want them, or they're out in the desert or out on farmland or away from the city where the noise, the traffic issues are not going to be a problem. And because otherwise, if they keep trying to ram these projects through, it just means more bad press and bad feelings.
Robert, people often talk about sliding doors moments, whether it is one or isn't one. Is now the sort of key inflection point?
Gosh, if I knew the question, if I knew the answer to that, Hamish, I'd sure tell you. To me, as I look at, these data center rejections, and as one who's chronicling them and tabulating each one, I'm having trouble keeping track of how quickly they're happening, that the number of communities that are rejecting them seems to be growing by the week. And it is, a lot of people here in the U.S. are saying this is going to be a decisive issue. AI, big tech is going to be a real key issue in the midterm elections in November. Right now, that I think that is going to play out. I mean, the Iran war, there are a lot of other issues, of course, inflation, that are going to play out as well. But I think this backlash, that the data center backlash is part of, but the broader backlash against big tech AI is here to stay.
Sadly, Robert, this interview is not here to stay because we're run out of time. We could keep talking about this forever. It's been wonderful to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining us on Global Roaming.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Robert.
That was Robert Bryce, author, journalist, commentator. He's the author of 6 books, including A Question of Power, Electricity, and The Wealth of Nations. Probably nothing sums up this political moment as much as that title, I think, Hamish.
I mean, I think that whole conversation was such a good reminder of the differences between the US and Australia. Like, you can feel there's a bit of political heat in this, particularly those suburbs or communities where there's the proposals in for data centers here. It just doesn't feel like it has the political potency that he's describing there in the United States. And I wonder if that is, for all of our faults, we do, maybe we're sometimes slow at getting around the regulation or making sure it works for us. But I think Australians have seen that as a nation, we've benefited by riding the big global booms, whether it's the agricultural boom or whether it's the mining boom. You can like them or loathe them as policies or you know, economic backbones of a nation. But I think we probably as a community get the fact that there is something that we stand to gain from this. And maybe it's just that there's not enough of them physically in place in the streets and suburbs of Australia's major cities yet for people to really catch on about how they feel about them.
Well, the first place will be Sydney, won't it? I mean, this is where the overwhelming majority of the data centres have been built so far, and I think will be probably in the future. But do you remember the economic figures that came out recently, and the government was quite excited about them because they were showing there was some growth, they were showing inflation was not as high as they expected. But data centres was at the core of those figures. And so you do have this spectacle of the Treasurer standing up and celebrating this investment in data centres. And we don't have the American situation, you're right, Hamish, but we do have a lot of AI anxiety. I just wonder at what point this fault line starts to become really present.
I also thought there was a point that he made that I thought was really interesting, which is people have a whole range of emotions around big tech, around AI, the platforms. Rarely do you ever have anything that you can kind of direct that energy or anger or frustration at. And suddenly data centers are providing a very significant physical target for that opposition or resentment or whatever it is that's brewing in a community. And look, maybe we will start to see that here.
And I suppose it raises the sort of the big philosophical trade-off in contemporary politics, doesn't it, between economic growth and the economics, the economic figures at an aggregate level, and then things like local life experience and the things that matter to us that can't be measured on a balance sheet. And that's always been there in politics, hasn't it? But this, I don't know, maybe you and I just differ on this. I feel like there's a big clash there waiting to emerge, and maybe we're just behind, or maybe we're fundamentally different. I can't figure out an answer to that question.
global.roaming@abc.net.au is the email address. Thanks to our wonderful producers on this episode, Rebecca Metcalf and supervising producer Kylie Gray. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.